So Sean Sherman is an award-winning Indigenous chef who is revitalizing Indigenous food, the founder of Natifs, North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems, and was also just named as one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People. And he joins me today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
So congratulations on being named as one of the 100 Most Influential People. What was your reaction to that, and what does that honor mean to you?
Well, they had reached out to me a little ahead of time to give me the news, and obviously I couldn't say anything until the major announcement went out. I almost actually deleted the email because I get a ton of emails and it didn't look like anything. So I'm glad I happened to open that specific one. And of course, it's such a huge honor. It's hard to even fathom. For me, I just really hope that this just continues to help open more doors for us as we move forward.
How did the joy of cooking come into your life? Were you raised with it around you?
Well, I mean, obviously everybody loves food, you know, and I started my culinary career very early on because I grew up on Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, and I'm enrolled with the Oglala Lakota Sioux Tribe. My mom moved my sister and I off the reservation when I was pretty young, just before junior high, and I started working in restaurants when I had just barely turned 13, and I just continued to work restaurants all through high school and college, and eventually moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota, became a chef, and it kind of went from there.
Well, you're trying to reverse the damaging effects of colonialism by revitalizing Indigenous cuisine. That's what I read. How are you revitalizing it? Does that just mean modernizing it, or what does that entail?
A lot of it's just identifying it. It's really understanding what our Indigenous ancestors were eating, their knowledge of everything. So it's looking at Indigenous-focused education and really kind of pushing against kind of Eurocentric academia and looking at the value of knowledge of Indigenous peoples on a global scale. And basically, Indigenous peoples everywhere have the commonality of being able to live sustainably with the world around us. And there's so much valuable knowledge in that. So for us, it's just looking at the damage of colonialism and naming it for what it is, for the extreme violence, for the racism, and for all the things that have happened in a very short timeline of human history, and starting to take steps back to basically reclaim a lot of our culture and just kind of move forward with really trying to understand as much as we can from our ancestors in the past, but also applying everything in today's world to really become something stronger.
And that kind of ties in with Natifs, the North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems. Why did you create it, and what does it do?
We have a lot of pieces going on because I have a for-profit and non-profit. We run a restaurant in Minneapolis called Awamini that's very popular. I'm focused on Indigenous foods and the style that we do by cutting out colonial ingredients of things like dairy, wheat flour, cane sugar, beef pork chicken, and just really focus on a lot of Indigenous food products. And so for the nonprofit, it was really just built because, you know, we need to be able to get this out everywhere because one restaurant can affect a community in a city, but we see the need all over the place. So the nonprofit Natifs, we have a public-facing entity in Minneapolis called the Indigenous Food Lab, where we do a lot of work, and it's really designed to be a support center for entrepreneurs, for tribal communities, just to help get more Indigenous food operations out there in the world by just helping people design, helping create menus, recipes, training people in kitchens, walking people through business startups and things like that. And we're about ready to launch a native market space at our Indigenous Food Lab, so our community has access to Indigenous food, which we can start to recreate that. So our goal is to basically put these Indigenous Food Lab training and development centers all over everywhere. So we're already planting seeds to open food lab centers in Anchorage, Alaska, Bozeman, Montana, Rapid City, South Dakota, and beyond. So we're moving pretty fast, and we just want to create regional center points. And eventually we can cross colonial borders, so we can be up in Canada or down in Mexico or South America or Australia, Africa, New Zealand, anywhere, basically, that is where there's Indigenous peoples that need support helping to develop more food.
What is one dish that you would say is totally your community?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say because we obviously share a lot of common foods here and there because a lot of us as communities, we harvest foods that are particular to our regions and we have certain dishes of things. And plus, obviously, the families of the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota, it's in a very large area because it crosses over the colonial borders into Canada and into a large area of what is the United States. So it's hard to name one piece that's very particular. But, you know, we just use a lot of our terminology. So we make a lot of like chokecherry sauce called wojapi. We use a lot of prairie turnips called timsa. And there's just a lot of things to explore. And, you know, and for us, we're really focused on understanding Indigenous foods, creating modern-day Indigenous pantries, and just coming up with a whole bunch of brand-new recipes, you know. So we're really looking into revitalizing and evolving our food into the now and into the future. So if you come to the restaurant in Minneapolis, you're going to find a lot of very modern Indigenous foods that are really beautiful to look at and wonderful to eat. I am working on a second cookbook that looks at all of North America. So we're including you know, and showcasing the indigenous diversity from Mexico through Alaska, including the U.S. and Canada. And there's a lot of work. So we have a Canadian publisher for this book and a U.S. publisher. So we'll be doing very soon a lot of work up there.
Now, that's really exciting. And to get your, because you said this is your second book, to get your first book, do you have a website that we can go to find out more about you and to perhaps purchase your first book?
My personal website is just johnsherman.com, and my name is spelled SEANSHERMAN.com. The cookbook is called The Sous Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, and the sous chef is a play on words, so it's spelled SIOUXCHEF. So people can just Google that and find it all over the place.
Awesome. We'll put the link up on our website as well, ravenradio.ca. Sean, I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Before I let you go, I'm wondering if you would play a little game with me so we can get to learn Chef Sean Sherman a little bit more.
I'll do my best.
Okay. We call this the Shanish Inquisition. So it's five questions, and they're really easy questions. You just tell me the first answer that comes to your head.
Okay.
All right, number one, what's the best dessert?
For me, fresh fruit.
Oh, see, I've always wondered about a chef, like, because, you know, you make big, elegant things and stuff like that. So I've always wondered what a chef likes for dessert, and you're telling me it's just fresh fruit.
Oh, yeah, because if I'm in Mexico or if I'm in berry season or wherever, just like whatever's fresh and season right there, you can't beat that.
I'll take your healthy answer as an answer. It's still dessert. Have you ever asked anyone for an autograph?
I actually, on my social security card that we have in the U.S. here, I've gotten autographs from Cheech and Chong and from Arlo Guthrie.
That's so funny. Why your social security card?
It was the only piece of paper I had in my wallet at the time.
Fair. What was your first car?
It was a 1971 Chevy Nova.
Oh, was it a hand-me-down?
It was used. It wasn't a hand-me-down. I think I bought it when I was 15 years old for about $700. And, you know, they're classic muscle cars now. And it was a fun first car.
Wow, 15 years old. Did you have to put a lot of work into it?
Constantly, you know. So I learned how to work on cars on that car.
There you go. So there's a good reason for getting an old car. You're making a lot of sense here, sir. I'm just going to tell you that.
Exactly. Sure.
What's the scariest movie?
Oh, that's a tough one. I would say the one that probably scared me the most. I like scary movies too, but maybe Insidious.
Oh, that's a good one. No one has mentioned that one before.
Yeah, I think those are creepy, for sure.
Last but not least, the beach or the mountains? Which one are you choosing?
Oh, they both have special places in my heart, but I choose the mountains. I grew up on Pine Ridge Reservation, but we have this little mountain range called the Black Hills in South Dakota right next to us, and it's a very sacred place for the Lakota. And for me, growing up, especially in my high school years and college, early college years, that was my home space, you know. So I spent a lot of time just growing up in the hills. You know, we were mountain climbing before we even knew about ropes and things, you know, and we were just out there all the time up in the hills. And I just loved getting way up on top of the hills and mountains and climbing up crazy cliffs and things like that. And so for me, it's just a really special place because I love just the feeling when you're on top and you can just see all around you and you just feel this wonderful, beautiful, clean air. And it's just a perfect feeling, you know, it's just a really beautiful energy.